We're back. This time with Richard Strozzi Heckler, the founder and president of the Strozzi Institute and author of a great book called The Leadership Dojo, Build Your Foundation as an Exemplary Leader. And we talked last segment briefly about the whole mind-body-spirit continuum. And the fact is, you know, we are completely interconnected, no matter how much we'd like to think that our mind and our heart and our body are all separate and everything. Well, we all know the truth that it's not. And to the extent that we are in alignment, as Richard was pointing out, it's going to completely shape our perception of success and the way we lead our lives. And why not take it to a new level of love and appreciation and joy? Why not? So, Richard, where do we go from here? And you know, you wrote a great book, and you go into some detail in terms of pointing out what an exemplary leader is. Why don't you kind of give us your sense of that, and then take a look at maybe some of the exercises or questions we can begin to examine on how we can live this life in it for ourselves.
Stu, the work at Strozzi Institute and what we call an exemplary leadership, appreciate very much in the beginning where you talked about that there are leaders who have followers, but everybody now is a leader in their own life. And so the book really addresses both of those things. Our mission here is to build leaders that embody pragmatic wisdom. So I mean pragmatic, so it becomes very operational in the world. A grounded compassion, which takes it away from isn't that sweet or this is a nice sunny walk on the beach, but a really felt experience of having empathy for the life that people have adopted and the life that people have chosen. And number three, skillful action, that people know that it's going to be minimum output with maximum results, and that we live in this notion of what's too much and what's too little. And the really key distinction for our work, Stu, is that we work through the body. And we work through the body, number one, because we can take what seems unseen or invisible and bring it forward. So somebody may say that, no, one of my ethics is to be compassionate. But then they can look about how they harden or contract their body, how they're not necessarily in their heart center, how they're not moving with somebody, and they can go, well, I have this idea about myself, but I'm not there. And we also work through the body because it begins to show how we can develop the practices that develop these kinds of qualities. And the notion of body is interesting because as soon as you say body, people will think of things like the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated, or my gut's too heavy, or I don't look like the woman on Vogue magazine or on the guy in Men's Health. And really, when we talk about body, we talk about two things. We say the body is the shape of our experience. So once you're trained in it, and it's not mystical, it's simply a training, and begin to observe people in new ways, you're able to see the history that has shaped this person and how that history continues to bring them towards fulfillment and success, or it takes them away from it. And the good news here is this shape of our experience is malleable. It can be shifted and it can be changed.
So here we are right now. Here we are in this moment that's never existed before for everybody, where you all got your shapes and sizes out there, kids. Now, what would you suggest, Richard, that we can all do right now? Just one, to observe where we are in the moment. Maybe a good place to start would be to maybe take inventory?
Exactly. So if you have the opportunity to stand up, stand up. Otherwise, you can stay sitting. Sit with your spine straight. Begin with your eyes and do this. Let your eyes relax. What a funny thing to say. But you begin to look at people in their eyes and you see how hard they're holding them. The eye is connected to the optic nerve, which is connected to the brain. If you're contracting your eyes, that muscle around that whole band, the brain will contract. Let your jaw go. What does that mean? The system is designed that the teeth never have to touch. So if you're grinding your teeth, if you're holding tight there, you know you're chewing on something internally. Number three, let your shoulders down. Everybody do this. Take your shoulders up to your ears, and then just let them drop. Think of your shoulders on coat hangers. The system is designed that the weight is held by the skeleton and not the musculature. If every time we're contracting in our muscular system, we're working too hard. let your breath come down to your abdomen. So every time you inhale, the abdomen goes slightly out. As you exhale, it goes slightly in. Let the muscles in the hips and the legs relax. So, Stu, what I'm saying here, if everybody has done that, which means this, you've taken your attention and you've dropped it down to your breath or to your center, which is about 2 inches below your belly button. That's your center of gravity. You've dropped your breath so it's low. You're out of your head in those circular thoughts like, how am I doing? What's happening? Will the world turn out? And you're relaxed. It's clinically impossible to pee anxious. Now, that's kind of the price of admission, really. It's clinically impossible to be anxious if you're in any of those places. So at the moment where you go, you find that you're starting to get anxious, you're coming off center, that's the kind of inventory that you want to take.
We're here with Richard Strozzi-Heckler, who is bringing us into our body. And the beautiful thing about that is because our body has its own inherent wisdom. And because it's connected with our emotions and our thoughts and everything else, to the extent that we focus on our body and its relaxation and its natural state, and as Richard pointed out earlier about practicing that, because it's maybe foreign for some of us, let's call that one out, okay? It's very easy to forget about our body and hold ourselves and with tension and tightness and all this other stuff, that we can shift our presence, we can shift our awareness, be more relaxed, certainly potentially more focused and more effective. Richard?
You're speaking now just struck off a thought for me that I just finished a article for a lawyer's journal. You'd say, I'm a funny guy to write for a lawyer's journal. I'm working with a group of lawyers. And I'll talk about the importance of the body, what it is, because like everybody in our society, they see the body as the mule that carries the mind around to its intellectual appointments. And then when it gets delivered, we tie it up and feed it and water it, or maybe even brush it a little bit. And so they'll say to me, they say, look, my expertise in my training, what I'm asked to do is to analyze, to think things through, and to be logical. What does my body have to do with being a lawyer? Well, there's a couple things. Number one is that what I just described to you about centering yourself, if you're not centered, in other words, you're forward, your head's forward, that's a whole field that gravity can pull on. The only reason you're not falling forward is because you're contracting at your neck and your low back, neck pain, shoulder pain. If you're not breathing deeply in your belly, you're not transporting oxygen, so you can't think as clearly. Number three is that if you're in a position like that, you produce an assessment in somebody else about how you are, that we're constantly assessing each other, and all the research has shown that these assessments are the primary thing, well over 95%, that say, is this person credible to me? You look at their CV, you're impressed with it, but if you see this body that's tense, tight, forward, not breathing, eyes locked, it's much more difficult to build trust with that person. And so what I say to the lawyers is that the first thing you want to do is you want to build trust with the jury, you want to build trust with a client, you want to build trust with a judge. And one of the best ways that you can do that is through your body, and here are the practices to do that.
So what you're suggesting here, Richard, goes far beyond legal persuasion here, because this is something for all of us. In all of our relationships, they all are foundations based on trust and a sense of being in alignment with our thoughts, actions, deeds, body, and all of it. And I also hear what you're saying is that even if we're not always aware of it, subconsciously, we pick up when people seem like they are out of alignment in one way, shape, or form, and it creates a barrier.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you a funny story here. Abraham Lincoln was interviewing somebody for a cabinet position, and he invited his assistant in for the interview. He interviewed the person, thanked them, the person left, and the assistant said, what'd you think of him? And Abraham Lincoln said, he's not the man for the position, I'm not going to hire him. And the assistant said, why is that? And he says, I didn't like his face. And the assistant was basically outraged by that. So here's the president of the United States. I'm not going to hire somebody because I don't like his face. And he said, how can you ever say that? And Lincoln said very wisely and very directly, after 40, everybody's responsible for their face. So what he was saying there, Stu, was that there's a way that we practice something, that practice becomes a shape in us, and it either opens possibilities or closes possibilities.
You know, Lincoln also said, as he was accused of being two-faced, he said, if I were really two-faced, you think I would have chosen this one?
Right.
So, yeah. You know, it's a great point, though, in terms of, okay, everybody out there, you know, I know that we typically would not want to take responsibility for our face. That's something that sounds like it's, for the most part, God-given or something else, right, that we don't have much control over. But what you're suggesting, that based upon the tension we hold, based upon our thoughts and beliefs, that creates the wrinkles, that creates the musculature, that is the entire presence that people see.
It has a great deal to do with that, absolutely a great deal. You know, one of the things as this book comes out is that there's been a number of people interested in the presidential campaigns about how do I see the candidates in terms of a leadership presence, for example, and what would I do?
Would you please address that specifically? Because let's face it, you know, the way we look at it here, that presidential election coming up is probably one of the most important decisions that any of us are going to be making for at least the next 4 years. So and possibly the implications could extend to lifetimes.
Well, it goes right into what I was going to tell you, is that both the person on CNN and Fox News, they said to me, gee, you're a hard grader. And, of course, my response was, we need to be hard graders. Look what just happened in the last 8 years, and we need to start to pay attention here. The other thing that was said, which was really shocking to me, is they said, well, you've said all these things, but these people are older. They're older. They've gone through their lives. They won't be able to change. And it was shocking to me that I could see that this general thinking about that we'll only be learners to a certain point of our life, and then it's everything is set in stone. This is a terrible thing, a terrible belief system for us to fall into. I mean, I've had the opportunity to see somebody the last five minutes of their life actually make a radical transformation. And I think one of the things, the ways that we can do that is to ask ourselves, are we doing the practices? Are we doing the right conduct and right mannerisms that we want to bring forward the light that we want to bring forward?
So based upon the leadership that you see and the way people, our political candidates, are presenting themselves, who would you think, in your humble opinion, to be the candidate most likely to be the most exemplary leader for our country?
In terms of the leadership presence?
Yes.
I would say Barack Obama. And here's why I would say it. That he's relaxed. There's some deep relaxation he has about himself. He's comfortable in his own skin. Now, we know he's bright. We know he has all those credentials. We know that he can make constituency. But he's comfortable in his own skin. If I had, and you can see that in his demeanor and how he walks and how he has a good upright vertical line. However, if I worked with him, if they asked me to work with him, what I would do is I would give him a stronger sense of center. And I really mean like a center of gravity. There's sometimes when I look at him that he looks light. He looks like in light and almost like he could be blown over, like there's no ballast underneath him. And I think that there's a way in which he could begin practices that would add some weight or heft to him in that way.
Well, I appreciate your insight there, because we need all the information we can get. And so I really appreciate your perception, because they're all intelligent people out there. They all have experience. And now it really comes down to, who is best likely to lead us into this century here and create the world we want to live in?
Absolutely.
And so I appreciate. And speaking of that, we've got only about a minute left in our segment here. Time is flying by. You're fantastic. What is your vision for what our world could be?
I'll tell you what I see here, Stu, is that the personal ego or the personal self, the divided mind, has come to the end of its evolutionary cycle. It has given us tremendous things like medicine and law and engineering. But now the divisions it creates in the world are actually threatening the existence not only of humans but of a big part of the world. And our task is to evolve in a way in which the emphasis is not on my personal gain, but how do I see the unification and the interconnectedness of all things and move in accordance with those laws. And again, like I would say, I mean, you know, my background as an athlete, as an Olympic athlete, and as a martial artist, is that one of the ways that we can do that is to get a good teacher, get in the right practices, and go towards that end in which we have a compassionate, wise, and powerful society.
Richard, thank you for showing up today. On behalf of everybody listening, we really appreciate it. Please come back soon.
Good conversation, Stu. Thanks.